will now hear stairs views, and then afterwards we'll open the floor up. Okay, so Stair from the SPGB.
All right, thanks. I'm confused. Hopefully it's not a permanent disposition, but I am totally confused by the conflicting opinion about the Occupy and what I've seen. I'm going to start off with a story. I was at a party last Saturday evening, and this guy approached me, and there was obviously some conversation going on prior to that. But he said he was involved with the Occupy LSX London Occupy stuff, and I said to him, "Well, can you tell me why you were involved with it?" To which his reply was, "It's obvious, isn't it?" And well, I said, "No, that's the reason I asked you the question." Actually, there seems to be a load of reasons why people get involved with these things. So then he went on to say that it's the bankers, and then one sentence further than that, it's the Illuminati. So, right, okay. So then you have to unpick all this stuff to do with, you know, the Illuminati and all other loads of other things. I went to the Occupy Norwich on the first day. A friend said that it was happening, people going to be gathering at the Haymarket, and at the time I took a few of these Socialist Party leaflets, questions and answers about socialism, and I think we mutually exchanged a leaflet here.
Yeah.
And so there was a leaflet here that was produced. It was produced anonymously. And I'm just going to reel off some statements within that leaflet, and it's titled "A Suggestion to Reduce Wealth Inequality." Statements within that, and I'll go through various things a bit later. But I'm just going to give a kind of brief history of a protest and visions, and also ask some questions that I think people should be asking themselves at the very end of the talk. So, anyway, this leaflet was an economy, eight sentence from it, "An economy does not function well with all the money in the hands of a few." Another passage, a piece from it, "Prevailing social model in the West has been a blend of socialism and capitalism. Socialism has most often addressed the symptoms rather than the underlying cause." Socialism also has a tendency towards the centralisation of power with the state. "Power of national governments to effectively redistribute the land. It is therefore within the power of national governments to effectively redistribute land wealth. Money generated redistributed equally among the adult population." So there are a few ideas in this leaflet. Okay. One good thing, obviously, is that the word capitalism seems to be on the agenda for discussion these days. I mean, it's on the radio quite frequently now, and obviously in the TV and this, that and the other. Another good thing is that, you know, the Occupy movement have enabled a continuation of a discussion about capitalism. One recent development that came out of the Occupy Norwich movement has been some discussion meetings that have been happening in a local playhouse. A discussion meeting with the title "Visions for Change," which, you know, in a sense, is at the moment is a space where people can talk and share ideas. So that's a positive development. Although, again, we come back to what people are asking for or what visions people have. But the other thing that I thought was quite telling and funny was the first day of the Occupy Norwich, there was sort of seemed to be some sort of incessant ranting by a Green councillor who seemed to be saying, we are not against the system is against us. Right, so that was going on a little bit as well on that first day. But all respect to people who are wanting to, you know, contest public space when, you know, when we're, you know, we're well aware that the actual, you know, the real occupiers in this world are the people who have power, money and control. So anyway, this discussion is a good thing as far as the Socialist Party are concerned. People in the Socialist Party have come together because we share a vision. We share a vision of a future world, classless, democratic world, which we happen to call socialism. Now, the Occupy movement this is not a new phenomenon. I mean, we can go back to, you know, the diggers of 1649 claiming space and also wanting to have the world as a common treasury for all. So not only was that a kind of a protest, but it was actually a vision as well. They had a vision of something beyond the system of society that was existing at the time. Further on from, you know, various occupying movements, you could talk about squatting, which has a long history. And then you have defensive defensive protests which occupy things like council and benefit office occupations. You have military ground occupied, like Greenham Common. Big demonstrations, things that happen across the world. 1968, there was a kind of there's a lot going on in 1968, but just to move it on, some of the people involved would have had a vision beyond a capitalism. And you have university and college occupations of the 1970s too. So all these occupations and squatting and protests and various visions, they go on as a natural reaction against the confines of the system they find themselves. One interesting thing that happened in the 80s, well, it got more interesting later. In a sense, it was a damp squib because there was something in the 80s called Stop the City, which was probably not many more than 100 people, perhaps 300 at the maximum, thought they were going to stop the City of London. You know, in a way, pretty ridiculous. But then again, the people who were involved with that did have a kind of vision of something beyond capitalism, and they did actually openly talk about capitalism and exploitation of the planet and workers in general. Going on from that, in 1999 there was something that happened in the called J18, and that was called the Carnival Against Capital. So that was far more overt that this is what we're against capitalism. Now this kind of came out of a politicised element within Reclaim the Streets. I went to those that and various other May Day kind of events, and that one in particular, but others further on, they were quite impressive events. They were you know, quite a carnival atmosphere, so it was a joyous kind of expression. And okay, so a lot of people went to those. There was probably several thousand at the Carnival Against Capital. But then again, it's probably organised by, the people who would have organised it had more of a direction and understanding of what they wanted out of politics. And that politics probably had a kind of environmental stroke anarchist kind of critique of capitalism. And I think what happened, what would have happened would be that lots of people would have attended that who wouldn't have had that kind of same critique, but they would have joined in with it. So that's a kind of that just moves it on, and then obviously we have the we've had the Occupy things recently. We also had in the 2000s we had the Alternative European Social Forum things that we put out some stuff to do with that as well, and they seem to be a big focus, but I don't know what's happened to those now. They were like a big talking shop. One thing that we could look at in culture is that we could, you know, take a look at art and how it relates to our human experience, and how art and culture and music can allow us a space to articulate a vision beyond the present reality. Maybe the best art is best music is stuff that actually does that. Right, I'm now going to sort of talk about capitalism a bit because capitalism is the system of society that we live in now. It is a class-based system where one class live off the other class. That class is a small minority, and it composes of the wages system where we all have to, or are forced to, sell ourselves to an employer in order to exist. Even if we're not able to do that, we have to sell ourselves, we have to accommodate ourselves to the market, the dictates of the market. This is why people, if people haven't got the money, then they can't buy food. If they if one nation state determines that it's in the interest of a nation state to go to war with another nation state, you know, then, well, that's all driven by markets and the pursuit of raw resources and this, that, and the other, and access to control. So capitalism is a system that, you know, encourages capital accumulation, and it's quite natural for natural and perfectly, you know, within the remit for companies to grow bigger. They have to grow bigger because they're competing with other companies. So one problem with things like Occupy is, and things like the European Social Forum, and you did have it in other aspects of any anti-capitalist movement, is the anti-capitalism is not really an analysis of the system. It fetishizes big business. So you have slogans that come up, which is like things like crony capitalism, as though, you know, if only we tweaked it, things would be a lot better. And all these big companies are to blame, and let's rein them in. Well, it's inherent in the market that companies do get bigger. I mean, if we take an individualised approach to, say, shopping ethically or something, then, you know, maybe in the past people would have... I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to buy my stuff from the body shop. Well, now the body shop's owned by L'Oreal, so where does that really get us all? At one stage of the game, people would have boycotting types would have had us all, boycotting Shell because they had interest in South Africa and also Nigeria. That was, say, 20 years ago. Now, oh dear. Esso encouraging global warming and environmental destruction. Boycott Esso. So people have got to buy Shell now. So it sort of goes on and on, unless you actually deal with the root cause. First impressions. The Occupy movement seemed to be a lot bigger in the States from watching YouTube videos and stuff. And reading about it, and there seemed to be a more of a focus in the fact that it was tying itself with aspects of the workers' movement and stuff in the form of trade unions. So that's another positive thing we can we can say about, you know, some aspects of the Occupy movement. You know, it's not enough, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, people have to do what they can to stop the encroachment of capital upon themselves. So, the other thing, as well as sort of confusion that I've got from the Occupy movement, is a sense of many occupiers seem to have a lack of confidence in the sense that, you know, well, this we are not against the system is against us kind of attitude, and a lack of direction, no real focus, because there's a because of a lack of vision. Does anyone play golf here? Right, Andy. Okay. well, I don't know why. I don't really, but anyway, I thought it was easier to do. And that's a golf ball, Andy. Yeah.
It looks like a testicle.
Yeah. Okay. It could be. Yeah. And right, this is the hole that the golf ball is supposed to go in. Yeah. And these are distractions. Right, this is a follow-up.
Is it on work then?
Yeah, only 2 minutes before the presentation. Yeah. So this is...
Stair, can I just say. I mostly go into the rough.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, yeah, is that Israel or the Illuminati? Okay, so, yeah, basically, you know, for anyone to get anywhere... You know, anyone, any social movement to get anywhere, it's got to have a focus. This could be like a fulcrum. And there's loads of issues going on all the time. But there needs to be a direction, and you need to have an understanding of where you want to go. Because anywhere else, you're going off target, and you'll be going off target forever if you do that. So, you know, things that we've got, that people, various people have been talking about within the Occupy movement, anti-austerity, food aid, stop usury, chemtrails, stop consuming, tax the bankers, ban the bankers, hang the bankers, stop cuts, war rights, stop a war, stop all war, anti-globalisation, and that's a bit of a strange concept, this anti-globalisation thing anyway. I mean, we live in a global world. We need to deal with the world in a global sense. What do you mean, anti-globalisation? You know, capitalism develops in such a way that it's likely to grow, so therefore it is global anyway. You know, what are you talking about? I don't even know what Codex Alimentarius is, actually. It's probably some conspiracy, but I haven't bothered to go down that path. Stop immigration, that could be another line that people might want to go down. Anyway, so basically I'm saying that you need to get anywhere, you need a direction. And you need to have some vision of what you want to achieve. So, you know, the vision of the Socialist Party is the establishment of a system of society based upon the common ownership and democratic control of the means and instruments for producing and distributing wealth by and in the interest of the whole community. That's what we're about, and that's you know, why we've joined together, because we see that achieving that would solve many of the problems, and some of those aren't problems, but many of the problems that capitalism throws up to do with the environment, this, that and the other, and just the way we behave and relate to each other as human beings. Now, problems of negating to articulate a vision that looks to transcend capitalism. Well, if we don't have a vision to transcend this system, we'll be going around in circles forever. Now, one thing that came out of some of the Occupy movement seems to be this sort of, and Chomsky goes into this as well, I'm quoting Chomsky in a derogatory way, by the way. He's sort of going, he's talking about national candidates running, and he's more or less saying you can come to visit us if you'd like, but we don't want to hear speeches from you. We're going to tell you what we think policy ought to be. So he's still talking about managing the system. He just doesn't want it run by money, you know. Well, that seems a very limited understanding of how the system works. So there's all sorts of contradictions within, you know, within Chomsky about all this. We mustn't forget either that the whole of last century, or a large part of it, was spent with equality and socialistic kind of sayings that came out of the mouths of Labour politicians. And is the vision so limited by various types in the Occupy movement that all they're wanting is an old Labour type of scenario? Where they think they can run capitalism in an equal kind of way. You know, the fact is that capitalism can't be run to suit everyone's needs. It suits a particular class, and that is how it works. So problems of not having a vision or having thought about what your vision would be to transcend capitalism is that you can easily be co-opted as well. You can be integrated back into the system because organisers, academics and activists, they can get involved with suggesting and making policy. Policy that if they accept the rules and terms of the system as it is, means that they will, be forced to, just tweak the rules of it. Integration is organised and academics, activists are involved with suggesting and making policy. So this is all how the, assimilation of the status quo, becomes, is completed. That's the safety valve all sorted. And people thinking that our government can do this, that and the other is all tying into the idea that the government belongs to us anyway, and it's not in the interest, it's not, the government is always going to be in the interest of capitalist class and capital. So this last point, I'm just now going to throw out some questions that people perhaps should consider, those who've been taking notice of the Occupy movement and those within it, and these are serious things that people need to think about in order to reach a conclusion. And I'll speak briefly about these questions, perhaps if I think it's needed. So one question would be: will individualised solutions or activism on or of itself ever be able to challenge ruling ideology and its practice of class rule? Do you believe in reform or revolution, and if so, why? You know, you either believe that the system can be reformed and is able to suit your needs, or you believe in revolution. Revolution meaning the transformation of society, complete transformation of society. I'll just taking this reform or revolution aspect and picking up on the last bit that Ian said. About the consensus decision making. So there's already a dichotomy between the arguments for revolution or reform. An article on the web, which is written by a cartoonist called Ted Rawl, is rather good to look at. It's called Revolution versus Reform, He seems to be a bit of a progressive cartoonist in America, but it's well worth looking at the article. So there's obviously a contradiction between some people wanting reform and some people wanting revolution. Now, so what I would say to that is, can you have effective direction? Can you have an effective direction with conflicting aims? You know, some people want revolution and some people want reform, and some people, you know, want to convince others of the Illuminati existing. How can there ever be a consensus about that? What I would say that consensus decision is good for, three or four people might be able to decide that they, you know, they don't mind the wall being painted blue or something. But, you know, consensus decision making, in my view, it kind of resorts to a kind of lowest common denominator politics. And the lowest common denominator politics I would describe as the things that Ian has articulated that's come out of the decision making in Occupy Norwich. You know, things that everyone can so-called agree with. Wealth inequality is too great. Well, big deal. You know, pretty much anyone would be able to agree with that. It's just a lowest common denominator position. It's not challenging the system. It's just a something that's not going to go anywhere. There's no direction to an object. Fairer system. Yeah, well, how many people say that footballers pay too much? Reduction in consumerism. Well, if we had a different kind of society, maybe we'd be consuming the resources of the planet in a different way to how we are now. But do we really want to individualise society's ills to, you know, make people feel guilty about what they're buying? And humans should enhance nature. Well, yeah, it's kind of, to me again, it's a sort of lowest common denominator politics that you get from consensus decision making, where in a way, you know, people are afraid to actually be, you know, properly political and have a strenuous debate about where you're coming from. I mean, this kind of thing also happened within the anti-poll tax movement, where, you know, there'd be people coming to the anti-poll tax movement because they might have had an anarchist background. There'd be other people who would, you know, be in the Labour Party. There'd be other people who would be Greens or something. But, you know, the one thing that wasn't talked about at any of the anti-poll tax meetings was, you know, to have an argument about what kind of society you wanted, or actually it was, you know, let's agree not to discuss anything political, which is kind of how unions have to operate to have a consensus of a majority within the way they go about what they're doing at the moment, until there's a revolutionary consciousness for something beyond the confines of capitalism. And the other point, the other question I would want to throw up is how are relationships of inequality enforced in society? If you believe it to be the state, how do you seek to address that without engaging in the political arena? So I think that's probably enough to throw out at the moment. Yeah.